I feel that the people that's been controlling everything for the last couple hundred years, they need to step back and let us, as Aboriginal people from along that river, let us get that back to how it was.
When our country was colonised, their early writings, they said what a beautiful, rich country, full of water and birds and animals. That's because we had a perfect management plan in place. And that management plan was don't be greedy, don't take any more than what you need, and respect everything all around you. That's the management plan. It's such a simple management plan, but so hard for people to carry out and to do.
We need to have some kind of compromise where we can come together as one. It's not about, you know, blackfellas knowing the best way, or, you know, we've got all the answers. It's about respecting that traditional knowledge.
It's very important that you include Aboriginal women in the discussions about management of land, management of water.
Well, I think we should be consulted. And the management of the river should come back to the local people.
Blackfellas always taken that first step to show these people. This is what we need to do. We need to let that water come down. You know, too much sick country. We need to fix it all up.
To bring it into the 21st century and to put it as two words, cultural flows. But I guess all we're saying is that what's needed is for there to be enough water coming through all of the story places that we have along the ways, through the waterways and the wetlands, to enable us to still continue to be able to do our ceremonial business. And it's very important to us.
Because this land is a part of us and we're a part of it. And we'll always be there. We will always be a part of this land. Aboriginal people will always be in this country, in this part of the world. We're the oldest living culture in the world. And we should lead the way in all ways, in all things. We should lead the way.
Hello, you're listening to Earth Matters, earthmatters.org.au on the Community Radio Network, bringing you environmental and social justice stories. I'm Nikki Stott. You have been listening to some voices from a short doco made in 2010 by Ellie Gilbert and the Murray-Darling Basin Authority Indigenous Unit called River Country Spirit Ceremony, Muradi Rue Pangari Ring Balan. The voices you heard include elders from several original nations within the 2,000-kilometre-long Murray-Darling Basin River system. Narajeri elders Uncle Mugi Major Sumner and Uncle Tom Trevorrow, Nyampa elder Auntie Beryl Carmichael, and Kuma elder Cheryl Buchanan. 21 original nations in New South Wales and Queensland have united to reclaim control over the water flows in the northern basin of the Murray-Darling. The chairperson of the Northern Murray-Darling Aboriginal Nations, Mudawari traditional owner Fred Hooper, says original people never gave up their sovereignty over the basin in the first place and are calling for it to be returned. The Murray-Darling Basin is a vast river system which runs through the interior of the central to southeast coast of occupied Australia. In 2010, the Murray-Darling Basin Authority proposed a plan, predicted to be released in its final incarnation any minute now, to secure the long-term ecological health of the river region and to counteract the environmental devastation wreaked upon it by 200 years of agriculture and industry. Predictably, this plan was not well received by the industrialists who rely on the river for irrigation and to sustain local communities both socially and economically. But while the ongoing tug of war between regional authorities, industrial agriculturalists and environmentalists continues, the ecological well-being of this vital river system hangs in the balance.
And so the Northern Basin Aboriginal Nations, it's a corporation, isn't it?
Yeah, we're a registered corporation. We're a confederation of, as I said, 21 Aboriginal nations, sovereign independent nations. We have two representatives as our membership. So two representatives from each of the nations are represented on NBAM, and they speak on behalf of their nations. We also have the New South Wales Land Council as members. They're what we call a founding corporate member, as well as the traditional owner groups. We have the New South Wales Land Council as a member as well.
Fred Hooper, Mudawari man from Woolloomooringal and chairperson of the Northern Murray-Darling Basin Aboriginal Nations Corporation.
Basically, we all went to a big gathering in Moree. There was over 100 people in Moree. The Murray-Darling Basin Authority put on a big gathering in Moree to inform people about the Murray-Darling Basin and the Murray-Darling Basin, you know, plan and all that type of stuff and what they were looking at doing. So from that, we formed this organisation. Basically, we looked at forming it on an ancestral owner base. So, it's a sort of grassroots organisation that's been built up from the grassroots to mainly, we look at natural resource management and water. We were mainly established to engage and to negotiate with the Murray-Darling Basin in terms of water for Aboriginal people within the basin.
There doesn't seem to have been much consultation with traditional owners at all.
Not originally. In the guide to the basin plan, there was no consultation with Aboriginal people. But, you know, since the new chairperson's taken over, you know, we've sort of worked with the Murray-Darling Basin from an NBAM perspective, representing those 21 Aboriginal nations. And recently, since the plan's been released, there's been, I suppose, a consultation process from the Murray-Darling Basin Authority where they actually went around and spoke to over 350 individual Aboriginal people and got their views and got their voices and they developed them up into submissions to the authority on the draft plan from individual, you know, Aboriginal people across the basin. There was also a whole heap of submissions that came from different nations as well. So they've all gone to Canberra now and they're being collated and put on the website and all of that as individual submissions to the basin plan.
Is that right through the basin then, like?
Yeah, all the way down through to the Kurong, right up to where it starts up at Warwick. But that's the only really the true consultation in terms of the plan. In the development of the plan, there were very little, you know, sort of we did work with the Murray-Darling Basin to try and get our perspective into the plan. But the writers had to write the plan from a legislative base, you know, based on the Water Act and that as well. So we tried to get a lot of stuff into the plan, but the writers threw things out on the cutting room floor and stuff like that as well. So,
ideally, what would the Northern Basin Aboriginal Nations Corporation like to see happen with the basin?
Well, I think that we needed to go back to a basis where the water's not over-allocated. That's why we're calling on the state governments to revoke all water licences and to renegotiate all water licences. And I think that they need to renegotiate it from a base that we hold sovereignty, dominion and ultimate title over that water and that land, and to make it more equitable and more fair. I think we need a more fairer system of allocation of water, because they've over-allocated the system to irrigation, really, you know, and there's a lot of cotton irrigation going on in the northern part of the basin, and they need to revisit that and revisit how much water is being allocated to that irrigation sector.
Yeah, because the environmental impacts, what sort of environmental impacts are you seeing around your country, like just say, you know, in the last couple of decades?
Oh, huge amounts, you know. Culturally, there's a lot of different plants and different animals that are really diminished in the last, you know, not extinct, but they're diminished from the area, you know, especially sort of trees were being fatigued and, you know, you could actually see the fatigue in the trees because they weren't getting the water. The river system was dying, you know. Certainly inland mussels, very rarely do we see inland mussels in inland river systems at the moment, you know. And that's probably, you know, with the introduction of the carp and they nibble away at the shells of the mussels, and there's a lot of that, certainly a lot of animals that have been affected, fish and that have been affected as well.
The river is important to us because it was our living, our fresh water. It was our life.
We put a little net out, get a feed of Kurong mullet, go out fishing, pull in big mulloway bigger than me. That's our, you could say, our supermarket.
our mob would gather around here and have a different feed of things. Like, it brings all the other animals, your kangaroos and emus, and it makes it easier for hunting, sustainable life.
It was a place where not just we go down to wash our bodies or to drink that water, but it was also a place of learning.
It's about a spiritual healing for our body and spiritual healing for our land that we live on. It gives us the food and sustenance that we need.
Well, it's like the blood in my veins. Without it, no water, mate, we'll die. It'll kill us. It'll kill our spirits, it kills our spiritual connections, it'll also kill our spiritual self.
The connection is part of who we are, so this river is part of who we are.
It's a part of my life, it's a part of my parents' life, it's a part of my grandparents' life, part of my great-great-great-great-great-grandparents' life. We've always been connected to the river.
I notice in the statement and also on the website there's a concept of cultural flows. Can you just explain what that is a bit?
Well, cultural flows is water that's owned by Aboriginal people, managed by Aboriginal people, for Aboriginal people to use as they please. You know, it's there for cultural and also some economic purposes as well. It's not just confined to a specific type of water. It's water that's beneficially sort of owned and managed by Aboriginal people.
Yeah, so sort of like a practical way of interpreting the spiritual nature of what the...
Yeah, well, that's right. You know, like it's like, I suppose, you know, you have water for the environment, and now through this whole system of allocation, they've allocated, a certain amount of gigalitres to the environment. We look at the gigalitres that are allocated to Aboriginal people for cultural use and cultural purposes, and fulfilling our cultural obligations. A couple of weeks ago at the fish traps, and to see young kids, at the fish traps practicing, a traditional way of catching fish that have been practiced for thousands and thousands of years, catching decent-sized yellowbelly by hand and doing it traditionally. People don't take into consideration that cultural practices are still being practiced today, and we need water to do that. If we haven't got the water to do that, then a lot of our traditions and that are associated with water is going to die out, and we're not going to practice them anymore.
Wadu, wadu, balkamani. Wadu, wadu, balkamani. Wadu, wadu, balkamani. Wadu, wadu, balkamani.
You're listening to Earth Matters, earthmatters.org.au on the Community Radio Network, bringing you environmental and social justice stories with Nikki Stott. If you've just tuned in, we're speaking with Fred Hooper on the show today, Mudawuri traditional owner from Woolloomooringal and chairperson of the Northern Murray-Darling Basin Aboriginal Nations Corporation, about how original people have never given up their sovereignty over the basin and are calling for it to be returned.
Yeah, and you're right, as Indigenous peoples, to autonomy and...
Well, to equality as well. Yeah. I think that you look at a lot of places along the Murray-Darling, particularly the Barwon-Darling up north. You've got a lot of towns there with very high Aboriginal unemployment, and they say that big farms and stuff like that do create a lot of employment, but if you have a look at a lot of the cotton industry, a huge amount of employment that was generated in the 70s and 80s from that has diminished, because of some advances in technology and advances in weed control. You don't have the huge amount of Aboriginal people working in the cotton fields that they used to back in the 70s and 80s. I remember you can go into a cotton field around Wee Waa in the 70s and you'd see 300-400 people in a cotton field, but now you're lucky to see one because of all the advances in chemical control and even at the latter end of the season when they're picking the cotton and all that type of stuff, the operators, they've got cotton pickers now that bail the cotton as they go along, so there's a reduction in terms of employment. You know, and certainly a lot of Aboriginal people used to work in that industry back in the 70s and 80s, which they don't work anymore.
Yeah, it's just a huge impact on community as well, isn't it?
Yep,
yeah.
A huge impact on community, especially Aboriginal communities. It's depressing sometimes, you know, to see so many people that are out of work and there's not, well, if you look at it, there's very little prospect for them to find work or to get work in any of the industries these days.
And also like work, self-determined work that, you know, not just any job, but a job that's going to make that community independent and strong. And
you know, I think that they're too much focused on getting Aboriginal people into white jobs. So if we get a blackfella into a white job, then that will fulfil all the blackfella's problems, you know. But that doesn't necessarily work, you know. If there's a lot of Aboriginal people and the pressure's on, especially with job networks, to just get people into a job. You know, it doesn't matter what type of job it is or where it is. We've got to get them into jobs. And sometimes that doesn't work, you know. You get people into work, they stay there for 2 or 3 weeks and, you know, if they're not suited to it, you know, then they don't stay.
Again, it's just there's too much cultural ignorance there.
That's right, I think, you know. And I think that a lot of our Aboriginal people don't like working in factories. They don't like working in offices and stuff like that. You know, they'd rather be on the land or in the bush and, you know, doing things that mainly outdoors, like a lot of outdoors. Door type work, especially out my way, you know, get a lot of people working on properties and work in the sheep industry and stuff like that. And I think that then, so one of the things that we've called for in our submission is that the Murray-Darling Basin Authority, along with the state and federal governments, look at developing a living rivers program up here, working on ways of regenerating, you know, the river systems and using Aboriginal people and Aboriginal knowledge to do that.
And ecotourism and that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. That's right, you know. Mm. And not only that, you know, you have a lot of these systems now that are degrading and there's a lot of erosion work that needs to be done. There's a lot of regeneration work that needs to be done, especially on the river systems. There's, you know, you have a look at the river systems now, they're matted with Ngoraboo, you know, one of the most, it's a noxious weed in Australia. And you go along the Barwon and all you see on the riverbanks is bloody Ngoraboo. And there's no programs in place to eradicate that. They just let it grow and grow and grow and more of a noxious weed right along that river system. There's water holes that have been degraded, you know, there's fish habitats that have been degraded and a lot of those things that need to be regenerated, you know, and I think that there needs to be some type of program put in place, especially in the northern part, because, you know, they had the Living Murray program, you know, and which they spent a lot of money on in terms of getting the Murray River right. Now I think they need to look at the Barwon-Darling River systems, you know, and those tributaries to the Barwon-Darling and need to look at, you know, how can we fix these things up, because, you know, a lot of the water that's been taken out of that system is taken out for big irrigation and a lot of that water is being stored in big irrigation dams and stuff like that along the system and the water's not free-flowing.
Yeah, and it's the lifeblood of the country, isn't it?
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, I've got this saying now that I say, you know, people say that the Murray-Darling Basin is a food bowl of Australia. But the northern part of the Murray-Darling Basin is the cotton bowl of Australia. You see more cotton farms in the northern part of the Murray-Darling Basin than you see anywhere else.
Yeah.
And cotton is a big, big user of water. They, you know, too, it's a thirsty crop and it's grown, you know, at the wrong time of the year when water is precious, you know. They're irrigating their crops in summer.
And do we really need all that cotton? You've got to ask, don't you?
Well, that's the question that you've got to ask, you know. And they say there's a food shortage in the world, you know. And maybe some of that water could be going to growing food instead of cotton. And
yeah.
All the chemicals that they put on, you know, on the cotton and that as well, it has to run back into the river system somehow. You know, it might not run back in terms of you know, the water that they put down the irrigation through the crop, but certainly runoff and all that type of stuff. You know, it has to, the drift of the crop when they spray it and all that type of stuff has to run back into the river systems.
Yeah, I can definitely see the point of the Northern Basin Aboriginal Nations Corporation saying, you guys are stuffing it up. I think you better just let us like take over again. Is that kind of basically it?
Yeah. Well, they've stuffed it up in the last 35 years. You know, since the 1970s, there's been so much development in terms of, you know, knocking down trees and growing crops, especially cotton crops in this basin. It's phenomenal. You know, I heard now that they're starting to grow cotton in the southern part of the basin. You know, they're growing it down on the Murray River. So, you know, watch out, you fellows down there, because once the cotton, you know, all those chemicals and everything get into the river, you know, can you guarantee that the fruit that you're eating from Mildura and the grapes that are being grown down there are grown on water that hasn't been contaminated by chemicals?
Yeah, you can't guarantee, can you? There's just no way.
No, you can't guarantee any of that now, so.
The pelican is my spiritual guide. The word with Nurundjeri is miwi. It's the spirit. It's the feeling of the spirit that you see when you have your totem around you and your totem's flourishing. When your totem's not flourishing, you know the land is sick and you know you're not doing what you should be doing. It makes you feel sick because it's not a natural, you know, thing for the pelican to do. Their nestings are usually in the water reeds, not in trees.
Our water's been infected for a while with all the cows and the sheep and all the chemicals that they muck around with to the farms up there. So our waters have been very infected for a long time.
I said, why do they do this thing without consulting the Aboriginal people? No, I think that's why our old people, our old spiritual people, were upset as well, our ancestors. Because it's come back. They come back as well. When things upset us, the old people's spirits are there coming back with us. And this, they don't understand that real connectedness between the Aboriginal people and the spirit world, see?
So how does the Northern Basin Aboriginal Nations find that it ties into the largest sovereignty movement in Australia? Because it's basically a sovereignty-based organisation, isn't it?
Well, it is. Yeah. It's an ancestral owner-based organisation. And we now understand and we know that there was an order in council from Queen Victoria in 1875, you know, in regards to the Pacific Islander Protection Act. And the Pacific Islander Protection Act actually, in its definition, gives the term Australasia to include New South Wales, Victoria, Queensland, South Australia, and New Zealand. And also in that 1875 Act, there was a proclamation that, you know, the Crown at the time, through Queen Victoria, her heirs and successors do not hold sovereignty dominion, over Aboriginal people or the natives, their places and their lands. It goes back to there, and there was Section 7 of that Act, and Section 10 of that Act states that order in council had to be proclaimed in all of those Australasian colonies, and that actually became law. So, and Australia had never recognised that. You know, the colonies have never recognised that in terms of, you know, all of their, you know, the establishment of the Federation never recognised it. So, yeah, we firmly believe that through that, you've got the Crown that makes up a part of the government of each state and in the federal government, acknowledging that they don't hold sovereignty or dominion over Aboriginal people. So we believe that we haven't ceded or acquiesced our sovereignty, and that, you know, that includes our sovereignty and dominion and ultimate title over the water.
Yeah.
And it's just like the same like your heart when the blood isn't flowing through it. It's very, very similar to what's happening to the rivers. And if you can imagine, you know, how poor diet makes you, you know, get clots and things like that. Well, that's the same thing, exactly the same thing that's happening to this whole river system.
You've been listening to Earth Matters on the Community Radio Network around Australia with Nikki Stott. This week on the show, 21 original nations in New South Wales and Queensland have united to reclaim control over the water flows in the northern basin of the Murray-Darling. Our guest today, Mudawuri traditional owner and chairperson of the Northern Murray-Darling Basin Aboriginal Nations Corporation, Fred Hooper, spoke with us about how original people never gave up their sovereignty over the basin in the first place and are calling for it to be returned. Also on the show today, we heard some voices from a short doco made in 2010 by Ellie Gilbert and the Murray-Darling Basin Authority Indigenous Unit called River Country Spirit Ceremony, Muradirue Pangari Ringbalan. If you would like to know more information about the Northern Murray-Darling Basin Aboriginal Nations, you can check out their website at nban.org.au. Today's podcast and others like it can be downloaded at earthmatters.org.au. Earth Matters would like to thank the good folk at the Community Broadcasting Foundation for their generous financial support and the dedicated peeps at the Community Radio Network for all their hard work in getting this program out to you, our listeners. Earth Matters was produced in the studios at 3CR Radio in Fitzroy, Victoria. Our contact phone is 03 9419 8377 and our email is earthmatters3cr@gmail.com. That's all for today, but next week we continue to bring you the cutting edge of edges on the kind of environmental and social justice news that you won't find anywhere else, no matter how hard you look. And this is Rumi Hunter, Kurong Boy, Kurong Girl.
Kurong Boy, Kurong Girl, Liberate, Bread, You Will, Jordan, Dennis, said we did, Rabbit Food, when we were kids. Light a candle, stormy night, open fire, family night, oh, I go back, yeah, I go back, oh, I go back, yeah, I go back, in time. In time, ooh. Ooh. Uncles, aunties, cousins too, grandfather, grandmother sing sweet tune, piano, accordions, guitars in tune. Sound someone playing spoon. Oh, I go back. Yeah, I go back. Oh, I go back. Yeah, I go back. In time. In time. Uncles, aunties, cousins too, grandfather, grandmother sing sweet tune, piano, accordion, guitars in tune, sounds of someone playing spoon. Oh, I go back, yeah, I go back, oh, I go back, yeah, I go back, in time, in time, in time.